Hello everyone, welcome back. First of all, podcast series 3. Thank you so much for tuning in and all your relentless messages over the last 12 months. It's honestly been fantastic and I'm so pleased to be back for series 3. We start as we meant to go on. So if you cast your minds back to series 1 and how we kicked off with Olivier Ward, who from then from Gin Foundry, we've kind of passed a couple of years now, and his incredible brother Emile Ward joins us for the first episode of series 3 post rebrand. So Emile's the kind of other half, and Spirits Kiosk, Spirits Beacon, Juniperlooza, Lampiñata, which we talk about a lot in this episode, which is really cool. So really, really excited to be back. Thank you so much for having me back and wanting it. We've got some really cool, really fantastic guests lined up, so I'm really excited for you to hear those episodes. But we're starting strong. And starting as we mean to go on. So series 3 is here, episode 1. This is Emile Ward. I hope you enjoy it, and please give them some love, give me some love. Check out Spirits Kiosk, Spirits Beacon, Juniperlooza, Lampiñata, and of course make sure you follow us over on Instagram and Twitter at First of All Pod. But in the meantime, let's crack on. It's time for the First of All podcast. Here we go, series 3, episode 1. Enjoy. Well, welcome Emile to the First of All podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
Very good. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on, kicking off series 3. So this is very exciting. So I'm really pleased to have you on. But I've just had a big old gulp of our now drink. So before we get any further into further conversation, talk to me, talk to everybody what we're having a drink of now, Emile.
Yeah, well, thank you again. I just want to, season 3. It's great to have to be on this show. And again, like maybe after my brother's intro episode, I hope to keep it shorter, but. It's good that you're having me on. I suggested we started off with a mezcal margarita. I'm all into mezcal and tequila at the moment, just because we've got Lampiñata, which is our tequila and mezcal show coming up on the Saturday 7th of May, to coincide with Cinco de Mayo or Mayo. So it's just a fantastic drink. It's just easy to make. I'm actually making it with Pensador. I think that's the same one that you have.
It's the same. Yes, we have the same. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I also am making it with Easy Mixed, which is a sour mix. So I just went to go and visit about last Thursday, actually, in Tottenham. And it's like it's a perfect blend of different citruses and sugar. And it's it just makes it easy. You just one part mezcal, one part Easy Mixed, and you add some lime just to top it up, but easy shake of rice and you're off. And it's just a great wind down drink, you know, one of those that you can just have after work or on the weekends, slips down, makes you feel happier. And
absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a crazy market anyway, just generally in the drinks industry at the moment, isn't it, with everything that's gone on over the last 2 years and things. But I'm a keen follower of kind of, you know, with Spirits Kiosk and Spirits Beacon. And I know you guys have been waving the tequila and mezcal flag for quite a few years now, and it seems to finally be picking up quite considerably in terms of popularity and sales and things, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's tequila was one of the big winners during the lockdown, because people wanted to recreate that kind of cocktail at home experience, and tequila was one of those. And I think people experimented a lot with mezcal, which was great, and with those smoky flavors. And I think mezcal also done a really good price point. I mean, usually mezcals were quite hard to find, and all priced pretty aggressively high. And I think now, especially one of those that we were just drinking at Pensador, you know, it's really affordable. And, you know, it touches all on the right notes and it's quite easily mixable. But yeah, in terms of what we're doing, we've got a nice range, but you know, you could always have some more. You always can have more yeah. in different ones. There's a wide variety of them. But, you know, there's, you know, we're sponsoring the IWSC Agave Trophy Award this year as well. So for us, it's a major focus and it's one that we see a lot of legs in the future. And but yeah, just an exciting category, really.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's one that I'm only really finding my feet with still because, well, just in terms of flavor, the particularly with Mezcal, it's just, it blows you away quite literally. And you have to really take your time with it, you know, with kind of some of the more, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to gin, vodka and things, but they can, this one is just so punchy in terms of tequila and mezcal. So, and the smokiness, and it's a clear spirit. Also, you know, some of them are clear. And then there's a huge, interesting kind of backstory and, the production process of things. It just opens so many doors, the sustainability side of things. It opens so many doors to so many things. So it's a fascinating category and I'm really looking forward to diving in a bit more. Like I said, I'm really in my early stages of it, but so far so good, really enjoying it.
And I think it's good that you touched upon that sustainability angle, which is quite interesting in their world, because obviously agave plants take at least 7 years to mature, you know, and so that's quite a long time to wait for you to cultivate a plant. But I think what's quite interesting is you're seeing people like in Australia, that there's a company that's now farming en masse huge amounts of agave plants and trying to either create their own agave, Australian agave, and to satisfy their own market and create some new products. But I also get the sense that there's also a sense of, you know, Mexico, and there's going to be a need to satisfy the huge demand that's coming from the US and from around the world. But you know, these plants they take a long time to grow, so someone's got to go and do it. And I think it's quite interesting to see those plans coming.
Yeah, that will be very interesting indeed. Well, thank you for introducing me to the Pensador, and the margarita is a drink that I've probably have some pretty bad ones over the years, in all honesty. But really? This one is, I wasn't quite ready. But and they can, if they're badly made, if there's too much, you know, I mean, the lime cuts through it beautifully, but you know, when, you know, the kind of traditional margarita recipe of triple sec, and it can be quite sweet and kind of ruin. But I mean, this particular mix we've got here is fantastic. So
yeah,
it's a great way to start.
I think if you've got, I think it's just, for me, it's just the how easy it is to make for me. I just don't have to think about it. But if you do want to go and explore a bit more, you should go and, have you been to Hatcher Bar in Dalston, or they've opened one in Brixton? And they make, it's been an award winning, apparently, margarita that's clear. So it's completely one that, you know, it's just been done, so it's just flavors are all mixed in one.
Wow.
And it's so Moorish, it's so delicious. You should definitely go and try it.
That sounds
amazing. You've got
amazing.
A bar where you can try all sorts of different things.
Next on the list.
They'll change
Perfect.
Your mind. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, before we get on to the rest of your round of drinks, Emil, now's probably a good proper introductions and kind of who you are, how you got to where you are at the moment, and I guess we'll kind of what you're doing at the moment. We've touched upon Spirits Kiosk a little bit, haven't we? So over to you, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, well, the people that know us know me and my brother Olivier, who you had on this show.
Yeah.
And you know, we started our life as a company called Gin Foundry. And actually, in the next couple of drinks, and well, in one of the next drinks, I go back even further than our previous days than Gin Foundry. But really, our story started with Gin Foundry, and where we did websites, a website about gin, talking about stuff. And he was really the main guy behind all that, you know, doing reviews and interviews and features about the world of gin, and a general communicator about just gin in general. And to that extent, I was trying to make a success and a business out of his creativity. Yeah. And so I created, and we created together, Gin Kiosk, and we also created Junipalooza, which was our gin festival. And yeah, we did that for about 7 years.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Crazy. Yeah, I can't believe it. And and then recently we've actually sold the company to Inotria & Co, who are a big wholesaler distributor of spirits and wine and in the UK, based in Northwest London. And and yeah, now we work for them, and we've developed our platforms in a way that satisfy not just gin but all spirits. So we we do all of the likes of tequila, mezcal, rum, whiskey, vodka, big in aperitifs, big into Nolo, you know, things like that. And it couldn't have come at a better time for them with the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. that was one that obviously nobody was expecting, but in terms of timing, it was
So it's been a really interesting ride in the last couple of years, not just because of the pandemic, but because of where we've changed in terms of us both. But yeah, there's you know, throughout the journey, there's been an absolute love for spirits and how spirits are made, but also the people behind it. We were always come back to that idea that it's always about the people. Branding is also a massive focus for me, and how things look, and obviously how things taste. But you know, for me, it's you know, I grew up, well, no, I didn't grow up, but I went to university for advertising, and did a degree in that. So I find advertising, the way you shape and shift and impress on people, I've always found that very interesting. So for me, how one tequila over another, or one gin over another, differentiates itself on the shelf, but also through how they speak to their customers, is for me what is really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's certainly something that you touched on a moment ago, just around the championing, that's a difficult word to say, championing the people behind the brand is always been a huge focus for you guys, isn't it? You know, particularly with the events and Junipalooza, you know, the Meet the Maker side of things. It's actually seeing the faces, while the team is very important, and the sales reps and the brand ambassadors play a huge important role to any company, but to actually get to speak to the people behind that spirit and the makers is takes it to another level, for particularly for someone like me that shows a real interest in it and a passion in it, and you just want to go that next level down. And I think that for me kind of sums up what was Gin Foundry and now Spirit Speaker, and it just goes that next step, and that's what I really want out as a drinks enthusiast.
Yeah, I think that's what we try to do as much as possible. And yeah, it's not possible with people who are coming. So thank you very much for being a big supporter over the years. But it's always been at the forefront of everything, and it's how, you know, people think spirits. Especially celebrities, which you're seeing a lot of entering the market, thinking, "Oh, well, I'm a celebrity and I can peddle some sort of product," and they actually find out that it's really, really difficult. And it's because it's not just something in a bottle. You need to be, you need to have the distillery behind it. You need to have a brand. You need to have the liquid. You need to be a person. It's an industry of people.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, the celebrity side of things, because and it certainly doesn't take away the, you know, there's some really quite, and actually the tequila and mezcal, that is seems to be the one that people are jumping in at the moment in terms of A-list celebrities, isn't it? That's the one that they seem to think is, I don't know whether they see it as a moneymaker or if they've got a genuine passion for it, but, you know, and I'm all for helping to get a category out there and growing it and making people aware, but you're right, it gets to the point where even just, yeah, just from an involvement point of view, from a knowledge point of view, that who are the real heroes here, and yeah, you know, in a brand. And but yeah, so that's a really fascinating point you bring up there.
You know, I think it's going to come to a point where there's going to be some sort of reckoning, I think. You know, you can't just have a spirits world full of celebrities, and I just think some of these people will stop and not do it because it's not worth their time anymore. Yeah. But yeah, and the quality will prevail.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, cheers to that. Absolutely. Well, yeah. Thank you for that. And it's good to get a bit of a background on you, Emil. But I think the next drink hopefully will further that story. So yeah, we've had our now drink, we'll go on to their then drink. So take us back, Emil, to somewhere, a point in your life. And yeah, what's drink number two?
Well, I think drink number two is the old fashioned. And it's tying it back into those years with my brother.
Yeah.
I think we both underestimate how valuable it's been to work together through thick and thin. But the old fashioned, it's not gin. It is whiskey. So that there's a clue in there. It's the old fashioned brings me back to a memory when we were doing Monkey Shoulder, and before Gin Foundry, it was his agency, and it was my second job actually, and in my first foray into spirits really, and it brings me back to those days where we were a full service agency for the likes of Monkey Shoulder, Glenfiddich, Balvenie, sorry, and Reka, and we did a few bits and bobs here and there, but it just brings me back to all the events that we used to do, all the festivals that we used to go to, and yeah, the Monkey Shoulder old fashioned, I can probably make it in my sleep. I've made so many of them, and you know, it was so much fun. And that, for me, when I have an old fashioned, that's it, the memory. It's a summer thing for me. It's okay. Summer festivals. Yeah, it's strange. It's a field. It's having a lot of fun with my brother, doing some work, obviously, pushing a product. But for us, I think it was quite formative as well, because, you know, we learned a lot. We did a lot. I mean, we did a bunch of things. We were so busy, and we back to back, and not much has changed since. But you know, for me, it's those good times with my brother doing, you know, trying to figure out what we like and what we want to do with the business and figuring things out. And while at the same time also being quite successful at launching Monkey Shoulder, which was not known at the time, and working on a heritage brand like Balvenie, which was really fantastic. I learned everything about Scotch and whiskey making in the making. And I do love whiskey for that reason. That's kind of so exciting for me to have come back into, you know, spirits in general and whiskey.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. The old fashions, that's a great shout. And I mean, I can actually pinpoint the first time I had it, and it was very, I say recent, as in it was probably about 6 or 7 years ago. And I cannot, for that, I've just, as you were talking, I was trying to remember the bar that I ordered it in, and I can't, which is really terrible. But I ordered it, and then I got a beer, because obviously that was the whole thing, wasn't it? You know, have a beer while we make it, kind of thing. And that in itself blew me away, because I wasn't, that was a real unexpected turn of events. So that, as soon as you say old fashioned, I'd get taken back to that moment that I ordered an old fashioned and got a beer. But it was just that, because it takes a bit of time. And but
yeah,
it's and actually and you'll know this probably through some of the things that you're doing, but I'm seeing a lot of the pre-made cocktail side of things, old fashions come up, and it, I don't know, I guess for me, it's it doesn't feel the same, because the only way I would want to drink an old fashioned is in a bar and watch the bartender make it and that whole kind of process and conversation. But equally, it is a delicious drink, so I'd understand that people want to be able to have that easily accessible. So
yeah, I think it's one of those things that William Grant have launched a pre-batched monkey shoulder old fashioned. I haven't tasted it yet, but it looks really interesting. But I get the idea of, like, it's very, you want it to be really easy to make. Mm. You don't want to have the hassle. I get that, you know, when, if you've got a bunch of friends over and you know, do you want to spend half an hour making each,
no,
everyone?
Of course not.
Because they're not going to come at the same time, right?
Exactly.
So, that's probably the memory also that I come back to, is how many times we used to create old fashions. We used to do a batch of 10. And as soon as I was finished, it was 10 more to make.
Yeah. Relentless.
Relentless. And that's the memory I have of it. But old fashions are, and it is an excellent drink. And I think coming back to all the drinks that we're going to go through, I think one of the running themes is I tend to stay really classic in the cocktails that I like. I do like going out and enjoying something a bit different and unusual. But, you know, you just can't beat those classics.
I'm completely with you. It's nice to have a bit of a riff on something every now and again, but I'm quite, I like the classics. I do like the classics. You can play around with them to some extent, but ultimately they're there for a reason, aren't they? I'm with you on that one, I have to say. So moving on then to your first drink. Now I kind of put this slightly open. It's like, it can be your first ever drink that you want, or it can just be the kind of the first thing that you found, you know, that you enjoyed and that kind of got you into booze. But so it's kind of a bit open to interpretation, but over to you.
Yeah, well, I went, so for my first drink, I went with the screwdriver, which is, if everyone knows, it's just vodka and orange juice. I mean, you could probably have vodka and apple juice. You could probably have vodka and cranberry juice. You know, it's really, really simple. The reason I picked it, it's definitely not my first drink. It's one that brings me back. Again, I think it's a memory thing. It recalls it. For me, it's growing up in Paris. I was young and going out with friends, and it was, you know, the easiest drink you could have in bars and clubs, and for me it's the screwdriver. I haven't had a screwdriver in years.
I can't honestly cannot think of the last time I had one of those. I like, you're right, that is just one of those first drinks, isn't it? And I think because it's not just a kind of introduction to alcohol, it is an introduction to the cocktail, isn't it? From a young person's point of view, it is a very kind of, it's an easy drink.
It's basic, yeah.
And it's got a name that would, you know, kind of appeals to that. So, it's very basic. But every time I do these, I'm like, oh, I kind of need to just make
revisit
one.
It. My other pick was going to be Malibu. And that is just, but that brings up terrible memories.
It's not a positive thing, is it?
So I tried to focus more on the positive.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with those drinks, and I think they're really simple for a reason. But I think it's a funny drink for me. It brings back a good amount of memories, and I don't think I will get out of my seat now and go make one.
No, it's just a bit odd, isn't it? It's kind of too, taking the classic vodka and orange juice, it's just sort of like, I don't know, they're kind of, in my eyes, they're two different, they're just not two things that would go to, I know it tastes completely fine. I know it does, but it would just not be a drink that I would choose to make, even though I've got both in the house at pretty much any given opportunity, but it's just not something. I would mix up, I guess. But I'm not saying it's not nice, because it is, from memory, it's a nice drink, but it's a strange one, isn't it? Mate, is it too basic? I don't know why I wouldn't do it, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think also my memory of it is that every time I had it, it was mostly vodka.
Yeah.
And a splash of orange juice.
Yeah, you know? Ratio-wise. Was...
So that was never very nice to have. It's a strange one.
And, more of an orange-tinted vodka as opposed to orange juice with a splash of vodka in it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I think, growing up in Paris, I think there was, for a young kid, there wasn't anything more fancy you could get your hands on at that time. Maybe there was, but I certainly wasn't interested in cocktails at the time.
So growing up in Paris, like, I always find it interesting, like, the kind of the drink of the younger people, in even though we're not far from, Paris and Spain, because I can't remember if I've talked about it on the podcast or not, but I went on a Spanish exchange, and they used to a lot of, it was called like street drinking, whatever the Spanish equivalent is, but I was like 15, 16 going over there, and it was two options. It was gin and Fanta lemon.
Okay.
Which is, funny enough, was how I was my earliest introduction to gin. Or it was Coca-Cola and red wine. And those were the two things that, because it was, you're mixing a spirit with a mixer. Those were the two kind of options. And I was like, what is this? I would never have dreamt of doing that in England. So it was that something from a, sort of growing up in Paris, was that the kind of go-to for a younger person, to their first kind of introduction to alcohol? Was there any other weird concoctions or combinations?
There was. I mean, I think mostly I grew up on wine and beer, but it's funny enough, I didn't drink that much Ricard or Pernod and people think, oh, you must love that stuff. I do love that stuff in the hot summer, and probably more in the south of France. But when I grew up, Ricard and Pernod wasn't a thing. It has become a more of a thing recently.
Yeah.
When I go back to France, people are drinking it again. And I go, that wasn't a thing when I was young.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was only a Paris thing or.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I'm not slating the screwdriver. I'd drink one if someone made it for me.
Yeah.
but the my favorite part of the podcast is the last drink. So your last drink on planet Earth. This is always my favorite one, and the one I look forward to hearing what you've got to say. So I'm really, really intrigued by this one. I think I know what it is, but over to you.
I think, there's just no way that I wouldn't be able to have a last drink as the Negroni.
Yeah, I thought it's just such a funny one, isn't it? Because I need to kind of go back and do a tally on all the previous episodes of what comes up the most. I know what comes up the most for the never drink, but I think the Negroni features on a lot of them. As either now or last, but it's got to be, isn't it? It's got to be the Negroni.
I think the Negroni has so many applications, and they're named different cocktails, obviously the Americano, but the Spagliato, but they all derive from the same thinking, which is vermouth, a bitter of some sort, which is mostly Campari, and then and gin it fits everywhere. You want to have a pre-drink before dinner. It's perfect. Even in the summer, even in the winter, you want to have, you know, you want to lengthen it, you want to shorten it, you can make it just two ingredients. But anywhere you go, you can have a really, really decent Negroni nowadays. It's fantastic. And I'm not quite sure about the history. I think there's so many accounts about the history.
There is, isn't there? It's a bit ambiguous now, isn't it? As it's become so popular, there was kind of always one or two stories, but now it seems, because it's so popular, it's like everyone wants to kind of take ownership. A slice of that, don't they?
Yeah. And for me, it's just, I think it's got the, it's so, the flavor for me, it really is appealing. It's perfect for before and after for a meal. It suits all angles. And it, you know, you very rarely after Negroni do you feel bad, as in terms of in a bad mood, you know?
Yeah, it definitely
it's kind of like the margarita like that. Yeah.
So for you me, know what I'm going to ask you now is, two questions. One is, obviously, it's your last Negroni, so what are your combinations? But also ratios, because I do think I find that, you know, while some people might think this is a silly question to ask, but I genuinely think that I think some people are just equal parts regardless, or they like go really in and go, right, it's like 22.5 mil of this.
No, I wouldn't go. I like to keep my cocktails really simple. So yeah. I prefer a little bit more gin heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be, if you don't have a navy strength, then I will just put more of the gin.
Yeah.
I will reduce, I reduce the Campari. You know, I probably do 20 mils of the Campari. I probably do 30 mils of the gin. And then, you know, vermouth is just 25 is standard.
Yeah.
But probably, you know, I do like a nice juicy, you know, vermouths like Belsazar Red, something that's quite lively. I don't like those that are too musky or deep. And then obviously, I mean, try to find something else in Campari. and then, you know, for gin, I mean, for me, yeah, if you can't go navy strength, something that's just super junipery, like Sipsmith, VJOP, or
yeah.
I know my brother's loves Tarquin, Sea Dog. You know, things like that. I mean, even Four Pillars Rare Dry is quite spicy.
Great, so, great, yeah. Negroni gin, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's quite a lot of things, different gins. So I'm not a snob on the gin. There's a lot of things are going to work.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I completely agree. And, you know, my kind of area is gin. But when it comes to the Negroni, it's like, well, you're adding, well, one particular very strong ingredient in the Campari or bitter or whatever. So I do think you limit yourself slight, you know, I while the gin is a massive important factor into the Negroni, you have to kind of let the other two do their job as well. So
it's a balance, right?
All about the balance, 100%. And, Are you garnishing that Negroni? Are you going orange?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually talking to someone about how the flesh of an orange sometimes can ruin a drink. And I never really, you know, people are now putting all sorts of flesh into drinks, and I've never had a problem with it. But now that I think about it, maybe I should go back to experimenting with just peel and flesh. But obviously orange, but no, I just keep it simple, and I don't need to do too much mixing, as in, you know, I don't like to dilute too much. I think it dilutes in the glass enough.
Yeah,
never lasts that long.
Yeah, it has to. Yeah, I'm definitely in the glass when it comes to a Negroni. I think Olivier said the same thing. It was just like, stir it with your finger, like that's it's kind of what you want out of a Negroni. You don't want any real dilution, and you want it cold.
Yeah.
You want it mixed. And that's kind of, that's as far as it needs to go, isn't it? But
that's it.
Yeah. Good to have the Negroni in to kick us off with series three.
Yeah. I think, like the margarita, the old fashioned, obviously the screwdriver is a bit different, but, you know, Negroni classic, I just don't like things that, take too much time to make, too many fussy ingredients, you know, just like things that I don't need. I don't need to remember all sorts of things. Oh my God, I forgot this, or I didn't put enough of that. You know, just, you can bash everything together. And if you taste a little bit, then you can always amend and change, and you can always adjust. I don't particularly like things that if you've made it and if you've made it wrong, then it's not going to taste good, no matter what you do to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think that, this is a thought I had a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like, do you think the cocktail is, as a concept, people just overcomplicate things? Because I know that sounds quite controversial, because from a bartender point of view, I know a lot of effort in everything gets put in, but certainly from my point of view, looking at, you know, social media and Instagram and things like that, and making drinks at home kind of needs to be easy.
Yeah.
Really, I'd rather leave it, you know, I'm not a bartender, so I kind of would, I'm more than happy to go to a bar or whatever and have a really, you know, well thought out, intricately made, pre-prepared elements kind of thing. But when you're making a cocktail at home, surely you want to make it as simple as possible, don't you?
Yeah. And I think over the years, it baffles me. I don't know if you are like that with your friends or people who come around with your family or whatever, but when I do, and not when my brother's around, but certainly with friends, when I've got friends around and I bash them up a cocktail in 10 seconds, I love making a basil smash. I love margaritas, you know, old fashions in my sleep. Negroni is easy. And I can do twists on that depending on what you give me. But they always go, oh my God, how did you just make that look so simple? And I'm like, you know, I just stick to the basics.
Yeah.
Just remember a couple key fundamentals about different drinks. Keep and just have a very short repertoire of drinks in each, you know, probably not vodka, but you know, gin, rum, daiquiri. I mean, daiquiri is one of the easiest drinks to make, you know, margarita, all that stuff. And then you can bash them out. It's all the same principle in the end. And they always get flabbergasted about it. But I think in terms of going to a cocktail bar, yeah, you want to be, I do want to be a little bit impressed. But yeah, I would hate, yeah. And I think with different flavors and, you know, I do love different techniques and stuff like that, but I want to either have the sense that people are making it on the spot or have really thought about it beforehand. I just hate waiting a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, you know, that I just don't, why, if you, it just, if for me, if I'm waiting a really long time, you just haven't thought about the service. And that means,
it's a big part, isn't it?
Yeah.
But not from not just from the customer point of view, but from like the bartender's point of view, like they don't want to be, you know, taking God knows how long to make a drink. Like they want to get it, you know, get it down and get it, you know, get it made, get it out, next customer. Yes, I'm completely with you on that.
And that's why, like, you know, I have huge respect for the bars like Taylor and Elementary who pre-batch everything and who spent hours and hours creating these flavors, these amazing distinctive flavors, and then they just dilute, you know, just put them in bottles, and when you're at the bar, when you ask for the cocktail, it takes 5 seconds. And you're like, what happened? You know, I haven't seen anything, but everything's gone into it. And I there's a part of me that wishes I would see a little bit more.
Yeah.
But there's also a part of me that goes, thank you.
There's a balance. There is a balance, but it's like, I'm kind of paying a fair chunk for this drink and I want it, and I want it now. So yeah, there's a conflicting balance there, isn't it? On prep versus convenience.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, before we get onto your never drink, Emil, I guess it's been a funny couple of years, and you've touched upon it earlier around, you know, like Juniperlooza and the events and side of things that you do. I'm kind of interested to know where you're at now. We're hopefully coming out the other end now. You've got a couple of events in for this year, and you know, I'm embarrassingly made my decision on my 30th birthday partly based around the fact that I could go to Australia, which is obviously on the other side of the world, just to go to Juniperlooza, even though I had been there that June.
That's amazing.
But you're just kind of intrigued to see, you know, how are things now? What's in the diary? What have you got coming up in terms of kind of drinks events?
So the most imminent one is La Piñata, which is our tequila and mezcal show, and it's the only tequila and mezcal show in the UK, and that's happening on the Saturday 7th of May at Tobacco Dock. It's going really well. We've got about 20 producers. Tickets are selling.
Producers, that's a lot. I'm just kind of thinking of brands that I know, which is few. But obviously they're not all going to be UK based. You're going to have people coming over, and you know, so 20 seems a lot.
Well, no, so it's not like Juniperlooza in that sense. We don't need the makers to be there, but we do. So we have we will have some, but it's not a requirement. Yeah. And there's a breadth of amazing producers here in the UK, and the one you're tasting, you know, we had in the margaritas coming. We've got the big hitters, but we've got some smaller brands as well. Awesome. Really, really interesting. And we've got live entertainment. We've got DJs. We've got wrestlers coming in, doing some play fighting. We've got obviously piñata. You can break down. It's going to be fun. It's a bunch of fun.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. And then we've got Juniperlooza, which is obviously the big one, the big show every year, June 11th and 12th, to coincide with World Gin Day. And that's going well, sold out. So about 60 exhibitors, tickets still available. Everything with both shows, the amazing part is that when you buy a ticket, you can sample away. And it's, mm-hmm. and I think that was one of the main reasons we started the shows, is that we were tired as a consumer, that you had to go somewhere and then you had to pay.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
It's so expensive. And the time that we live in now, with everything going up a little bit and people being squeezed, I think it's a great show where you can try all the gins that you want. No hassle. There's going to be a cocktail bar, obviously. There's going to be masterclasses run by my brother. There's a bunch of stuff going on. There's a bit more entertainment going on this year, which is great. So those are the two main events. Obviously, we're doing Juniperlooza in Australia with Sydney in August, with Melbourne in October. But then otherwise, my brother's working really hard on Spirits Beacon, which is our website, and he's just writing all sorts of stuff. I mean, you know, some of the articles that he's been commissioning and writing himself have been really, really quite amazing. And Spirits Kiosk is, oh my God, it's nonstop.
Yeah.
So it's, with Spirits Kiosk, what we're trying to do is we're trying to be a little bit different than the other people on the market. We're trying to make everyone's decision comfortable in a way that they understand what the products are all about. And there's no hiding. So there's, you know, if you want to buy Campari and Aperol and some you know, commercial brands, just totally fine. Just so you know that this is how it's made. Who makes it? Campari owns it. Things like that. And then there's smaller producers, the exclusives, the limited editions, the more niche stuff that we really focus on. So yeah, but that's our world. We live in that, and obviously, it's going well. But it's been great to see that the on-trade, which, you know, bars and restaurants, have come back roaring. So
yeah,
it's
fantastic.
It's been really good. I think going out again has been fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. and yeah, just to touch a little bit on Spirits Kiosk, you know, it's not just a alcohol thing. It's not just a drinks thing. In terms of a website that you're buying a product from, I think from a consumer point of view, to be able to just have very quick, easy access to background information on brand, who makes it, how it's made, where it's made. It's literally like a few lines. It's like, duh, 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 duh. that's all the information you need as a consumer to make the decision, like, do I want to buy this, do I not? Rather than having to go back, like leave the website, go back on Google, Google this brand, look at, right, who makes it, where is it made, do they actually make it, is it contract, which is completely fine. But to have all that information there before you've even scrolled down to add to basket is fantastic. And I you know, that's clearly why you're probably, you know, you're so busy all the time, and but it just gives the consumer, it gives us a massive insight in such a short space of time in just reading a few lines to make that decision to buy into a brand and commit and buy a bottle and you know, get it. And I say this as someone that's bought off that website many times, arrives very, very quickly. And you're kind of, you know, it's like, it's ready to go. It's like a couple of days, bang, open up, here we go. We're and you go back to the website and you read it again and you have a drink, and it's great. It's fantastic.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that. That's exactly why we spend so much time on it. And I think there's so much more we can do, and obviously we're going to do. Obviously there's not enough time in the day, but it's great to see that recognition is happening, so that's really nice to hear. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, here we go. So never drink, Emil. I have to nail you down. We're getting rid of something tonight, so yeah, what are we eliminating from the face of the earth?
I absolutely hate the porn star martini.
Oh, now that this is obviously episode one, series three, but I have recorded a couple more, so it's kind of like out of order. So this is the most controversial series of the podcast.
We've got some absolute
stonkers in there, and this is at the top of the pile. Porn star martini, yeah. People are gonna really be unhappy. But so, Bill, bring me your case. Why do you hate it? Why are we getting rid of it?
I think it's definitely passion fruit for me. I absolutely hate that fruit, and I think it's because of the stickly sweet aspect of it. I hate the color of it. I think it's just so unappealing as a fruit as well. But I hate how it's, you know, cut in half and then put onto the drink and then, you know, let, you know, people put it ablaze.
Slimy.
Oh, it's slimy. It's just the wrong colors. And then it's made it, and it's so sweet. I hate it. But I also think it could be the modern day hated cocktail made by bartenders. I don't know. Maybe I'm incorrect. Maybe bartenders will correct me. But I find, you know, the mojito is known as one of those really complex drinks that bartenders, like, if you order 10 at a time, you're the enemy, right? You're the enemy, and they'll probably spit in your drink. I feel like the porn star martini is our modern day that, and it's similar to the espresso martini, and I love espresso martini, so don't get me wrong, but in the fact that you've got to spend some time doing them. It's not, there's no shortcuts. And I think I don't know, maybe porn star martinis are easier than that. But if I were doing a shift behind the bar and someone was telling me, please make 10 porn star martinis, I'd quit because it's so sweet, it's so disgusting. I have to put on fire these hideous fruits to make just a to make a martini that's just not up to par to any other martini out there.
Are we even going to discuss the shot of Prosecco or cider Prosecco, which traditionally comes with it?
It's unnecessary, right?
It is, isn't it? Because the thing is, you're just not pouring that in it. It's not like it's not like a jus on a nice main course that you're pouring over the delights. It's kind of just a random sort of like neck a bubbly shot and then drink a Yeah. Oh. I'm with you on the passion fruit. I'm with you on the passion fruit. Because when I was very long time ago, when I was in my first job and working in the kitchen, and we did a dessert that was passion fruit, and I hated having to. I mean, it's more seed than fruit, isn't it? Like, yes. I swear to God, it's more seed than fruit.
I think you nailed it when you said it's slimy.
Oh, yeah. And it was just in this like that, like an egg, that like horrible, like sort of jelly, yeah. Sort of like encased. Oh yeah. So I do hate a passion fruit. I do. So I'm completely with you on that. But I know the porn star martini is very, very popular. But I'm with you. If I was a bartender and I've got to make 10 of those, and when I say make them, I say make them properly, not like when you go to some place and they're pre-batched, yeah. And you're just pouring it out of the bottle. Like that's not even included in this. When you actually have to make those, nah. Yeah.
Nah, and they're not worth it.
They are so sweet. They are so sweet. They're so sweet. And
I think it, for me, it's also like, I think I just wouldn't go to a bar where the porn star martini is the flagship thing, you know, and no. I think it's the wrong crowd for me. It's just all of it. I think it's the people who drink it. It's the way it's made. It's the fruits. Sorry.
I think, like I say, series three is definitely the controversial series, because, as I say, there's some very popular drinks that slot into the old never drink. So if people are outraged at this on episode one, trust me, I don't know if you're going to want to listen to the rest of the episode. So, but it's all part of the conversation. It's all a bit of fun. It's all enjoyable. So yeah. I will allow the porn star martini. So we'll let's recap your round of drinks, Emil, because these are cracking. So your now drink was a mezcal margarita with the Pensador, which was absolutely delicious. You'll then drink a monkey shoulder old fashioned, which you have lovely memories of with you and your brother. Your first drink, a screwdriver, which I am partly tempted to have at some point, but I don't know how or what I'm going to do with that. But you've reawoken my senses to the screwdriver. So at some point over the next couple of weeks, I will be having one. Your last drink is a Negroni. And we're going slightly heavy on gin, something more traditional like Tarquin's or Sipsmith BJOP, dialing down the Campari by about 5 mil and then 25 mil of vermouth, which is a fantastic, nice, easy last cocktail. And then you'll never drink the drink that we're eradicating from the face of planet Earth is the porn star martini.
I think that's an amazing selection. I think
I do. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Emil. Where can people find you again if they missed it at any point in that?
Yeah, I'm obviously on LinkedIn, but otherwise, Spirits Kiosk, Spirits Beacon, and our two events, La Piñata and Junipalooza.
Fantastic. Well, I hope to see you at those in the coming weeks and months. Thank you so much for taking time out to chat with me out of your very, very busy schedule. I know how busy you are. So wish you all the best with those and look forward to seeing you very soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rory.
There we go. I really hope you enjoyed the first episode of the third series of the Thirst of War podcast. That was Emil Ward. You can find more information over at Spirits Beacon and at Junipalooza and, of course, La Piñata, which I hope to see you all at. You could, of course, find me over at Thirst of War Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star review. That would be very much appreciated. If you're on any other podcast platforms, please just spread the word. I really like to get this out there. People seem to like it, which is really cool, and people have been asking for series 3, so here we are kicking off. And next week, does not disappoint, and it follows in the same footsteps as series one. So that is a little bit of a clue for the next guest. And it also contains, spoiler warning right now, one of the most controversial never drinks that we've had on the podcast, which, so you know, is going to be good. So make sure you tune in. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure as always. And as I always sign off, raising a glass to you all. Cheers.